Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club.
Mark Sadler joins us today on Blondie and the Brit from Tucson, Arizona. His novel, Kettle of Vultures, released 2 days ago on March 7th by indie publisher Moonshine Cove. His other book, Blood on His Hands, was released a few years ago, and in a memoir, he's working on a memoir, My Heart Bleeds Peanut Butter. Mark contributes reviews and articles to Suspense Magazine and Tucson Foodie. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. All right, so your book is out, just out. Now, first, let's give you a chance to talk about Kettle of Vultures.
Well, Kettle of Vultures takes place in Tucson, Arizona, where I live.
Cool.
I came up with the idea of a Hispanic detective, and so I'm writing this in the first person, which is kind of awkward since I don't speak Spanish and I've never been a police officer. But
you're daring, man! I like your guts.
Write what you know. Write what I have to. So.
And you're British. Let's add that in there.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah, nothing like stretching you out there, Mark. Okay.
I love it though. What a daring.
What can I do? You know, the old adage is sex sells. So I made him a sex crime detective.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. But people are dead, so it's not quite the same.
They're not all dead.
Okay.
And so we started that with that premise. I wanted to come up with something special, and so. Obviously, you want a good name for a detective, so a good, strong-sounding name. So I originally picked the name Nate Duarte.
Ooh.
So I thought it's a detective name. But I thought, you know, Duarte sounds Spanish, but it doesn't sound Mexican to me. And having lived here in Tucson since 1993, you get an idea of the way words sound. So I looked up the origins of the word Duarte, and actually it's El Salvadorian. So I was right, it's Spanish, but not Mexican. So I thought, well, that'll work, because I knew that in the 1970s, historically, there was a large number of refugees coming from El Salvador that the Catholic Church was helping distribute through various monasteries and through the nuns in Tucson all over the country. So I thought, well, I could make his mother a political refugee coming up from El Salvador. That'll work. So we went with that. So I started looking into El Salvador a little bit and discovered, completely unbeknownst to me at the time that I picked the name, that the president of El Salvador was President Duarte.
Ooh.
So I thought, oh, this was meant to be. So we go from there. So the way I write is, well, I'm what they call a pantser, I guess. Is I have an idea of the general idea of plan of what's going to happen, but I really don't know how it's going to get there. So it's kind of like having a skeleton. I've got the head, so I know what's going to happen there, and I've got the feet, so I know how it's going to end. So it's just a matter of slapping some meat on the bones in between time, because I have no idea how we're going to get from the beginning to the end. It just kind of falls in place as I go along.
Oh, that's cool.
That's kind of how I write, too.
I thought that's why I decided to write, because I thought, oh, that sounds so much better than just plotting it out. But as it turns out, I plot way more than I... Maybe it's because I write something a little more complicated, but it's, yeah.
I thought that I would have been a plotter. I was actually surprised to find out that I wasn't.
Yeah. So you're the opposite of me. That's so funny. You never know until you turn.
Everything I do in my life is so organized.
Yeah.
For instance, when I first moved over here, I was living in Oklahoma. My parents came to visit, and 3 months before they got here, I knew what they would do for every hour of every day they were here, what restaurants they would go to on what night, what they would have to eat at that restaurant. I mean, everything was just...
Wow.
Yeah, and it all works well for me because I know exactly what's going to happen. There's no surprises. I'm not in...
Well, what about them? How did they feel about that?
they were fine with
it. Eat now, it's time.
I don't care if you're hot, hungry.
You don't have to order anything. I know what you're going to eat when we get... No, but... The whole trip worked fine because I knew what they liked. I knew what their taste would be. You know.
Wow.
So when it came to writing, I didn't plot everything out and was just kind of going off the seat of my pants. I was like, wow, this is a new experience for me. So I was kind of neat.
That's probably why, though, because you know, when you got creative, you wanted to shut that side of your brain off and just kind of roll with it, you know, just because you do like to be organized. I'm guessing that's what's going on.
Probably a little bit opposite than the normal process. And it's been kind of fun doing it.
How about?
It's far as Kettle of Vultures is concerned, without giving anything of the plot away, when his mother arrives in Arizona, she, as it turns out, being related to the president, is worth a little more money, and so they send a coyote up with her, and she obviously is trying to get away from the coyote, and she's a very attractive young lady, and so the border guard decides, when he captures her, not to throw her back over the border. So there's a brief encounter on the border overnight, and although the border guard is killed the next day by the same coyote that brought her over because he's looking for the money, she is indeed now pregnant. And
oh, gosh.
Wow.
And that's
just so I understand, a coyote is actually a real person, right?
Coyote is a person. It's the name given to the guide, I guess you would give them. They call them.
Okay. Coyotes,
so the people are the migrants that are coming over are called polos, which is chickens, and the coyote. So it's like the coyote and the
chicken.
Oh,
I get it. Oh, my gosh.
That's
good. Wow, I didn't even know that. So you learn something every time.
That's right, Suzanne.
So he becomes a police officer, and both his parents in the end are killed by the time he's 8 by the same bad guy. And so he becomes a police officer to bring his parents' murder to justice. Of course, by the time we meet him, he's now 31 and a detective. And the bad guy has risen through the ranks and is now head of the Sonoran cartel.
Wow.
Oh, this is good. I like all this.
Exciting.
It does.
I was just saying, with all the sex crimes that he has to go through on a regular day as a police officer, the situation with the cartel is kind of like the glue that brings the three books in the trilogy together. And then each book then, of course, is a separate sex crime that he has to solve as well. So I've got two different crimes going on to follow at the same time.
So this is book one of the series?
This is book one of the series, yes.
Oh, cool. And do you have names for the other two?
The second one I have so far entitled Can You See Me Now? Just briefly, that stems from someone who's a voyeur. So you think you're being watched through the window, but you're not quite sure. And the next morning when you walk out in red lipstick written on the windowsill is... Can you see me now?
Oh, that's creepy.
I'm glad we're doing this interview in the morning.
I know.
Because it's kind of spooky out here in my studio when it's dark.
Oh, that's right, it is.
It's kind of funky in a way when you think about it. But I've had to invent sex crimes that haven't happened yet, which is...
Wow.
Interesting.
And how do you do research for that? We don't even want to know.
I actually have a book. Written by an FBI profiler after interviewing 18 different psychopathic sex crimes murders who were in jail. So.
That is a good resource for such of a book. Such
yeah,
of a series.
Amazing.
Cool.
And I have to ask about the title because it's an incredibly great title.
It is.
Where did you come up with that?
Well, the vultures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever see pictures of vultures that are circling in the air, you know, there's obviously a dead body or something dying out there. That is a kettle of vultures. Kind of like a murder grows in a kettle of vultures.
Didn't know that about vultures. Interesting.
Ooh, and that adds a whole other layer. You think about, you know, the theme of the book. It's circling over something that has died. I like it. I like it.
KJ will read it because I don't read that kind of stuff and tell me all about it.
I don't know.
It's the PG-13 version.
I used to read Patricia Cornwall, and she has all these murders, and I couldn't sleep. I'd be at like my grandparents' house. I'm thinking someone could come in that window right there, and, you know, like all night long I'd be stressed out about who was going to come and murder me and bury me in the potter's yard or whatever. I don't know. I couldn't do it.
I find the research of the books very exciting. I've been out running around with the sheriff's department and the border patrol, and they take me out on drive-alongs. I actually help, you know, pull five illegals out of the riverbed with a helicopter, the lights flashing, and the helicopter and the blades going around at midnight one night.
Get out. Check you out.
Yeah, I have to do a little research like that.
Adventuresome.
And the bad guy character, of course, is always fun plotting the bad guy. Who is he? Where does he come from? And why doesn't he like women? You know.
Oh.
So I was visiting my son in Oklahoma. He lives lived at the time in a very small town called Prague, and that's kind of like Prague, Czechoslovakia, spelled the same way, but in Oklahoma they call it Prague.
I can't say it right.
and so he got my son works in the oil field, and so while I'm out there for Thanksgiving, he got called away to work, and so I'm stuck out in the middle of this little tiny town. There's only about 2,000 people that live there, so you know if you walk 20 minutes in any direction, you've covered the entire town. You know? And so I thought, why not have him come from Prague? since I'm going to be here, I may as well spend the 4 or 5 days I've got doing some little research.
Okay.
So I got to the local historical society, and they opened up the museum for me and gave me a little one-on-one type thing. So I built the storyline from there. They have a ceremony every year where they present the Kolachi Queen. Kolachi is a Polish pastry of some kind.
Yep.
And so they have a Kolachi Queen every year. So I use that in the book and just kind of build the town Prague up as it was back in 1970, which was why I needed the historical society.
Oh, that's cool.
Because grocery store names have changed and all that kind of stuff. So although I'm writing fiction, everything when it comes to the physical locality and historical, everything is accurate.
Right.
So when you drive around Tucson, you're going to see the buildings and the street names that I mentioned in the book. So I try and keep it to that as much as possible. Now, as I mentioned in our little preamble to this, I'm a big Everton fan. In fact, I'm sitting here watching the game on the computer. We still haven't scored. So one of the things I like to do marketing-wise is to try and help sell a book in England, for instance, is put Easter eggs in my book.
Oh.
And so I put little words and names in there that anybody who's not an Everton fan wouldn't have the vaguest idea. But if you are an Everton fan and you have a character in the book who's a big Jamaican police officer named Goodison Parker, and the actual name of Everton Stadium is Goodison Park.
Oh, she's got these
the street that the stadium on is Gladys Street, and so we have a police officer whose name is Gladys Street.
Oh, I love it. And that's so cool.
Wow!
I do this throughout the book as a little extra marketing ploy to encourage your Everton supporters to buy the book.
And to get, like, little treats as they go along. That's so cute.
You should go to Everton and parlor books and, you know, see how many they can find, you know?
You should. You could do little contests and stuff. You could certainly, and, you know, they call it an Easter egg, but, like, maybe even around Easter do, like, a, since it's coming up, do a, like, how many can you find, and you get a prize, or...
I've got a lot of wonderful friends who are Everton supporters I've met primarily through Facebook that bought the original book, so why wouldn't they buy the second one, especially if they've got a little treat lined up
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
Now, you're published through Moonshine Cove. How did you like working with them, and can you tell us a little bit? You describe them as an indie publisher?
Yeah, they do, as I understand, about 36 books a year, so it's not one of the big publishing houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on with them now for a few months, but it's kind of like being on a plane on the runway waiting to take off. You know, there's a plane ahead of you and you've got to wait. So it's a matter of, they have to wait until the one they're working before you is finished up before they can get to you. And then when they do get to you, which started about 10 days ago, it's like, wow, everything in a rush. Do it now. Get all this stuff back. So I've been editing for the past 2 or 3 days and trying to get the last 2 or 3 final edits down to be sure everything's polished and ready to go. That's been kind of fun.
Wow.
Well, cool.
They're in South Carolina, so that's a place I've always wanted to be, so I was a little intrigued by that. The way I hooked up with them was a little different as well. You'd mentioned that I do reviews for Suspense magazine.
Yeah.
And I was approached by a friend who said, listen, someone I know has recently written his debut novel. He's an attorney in New York. I wondered if you'd read his book and review it for Suspense magazine. So I said, sure. And I read it, and it was a good book. It wasn't anything that I felt was spectacular. It wasn't like a James Patterson or anything, but for a debut novel, it was pretty good. And but then I thought, this isn't any better than anything I've written. And if he can get published, I wonder who his publisher is. So I looked up and find out it was Moonshine Cove.
Oh.
And so I went on their website, and as the usual, you know, send us the first 10 pages and we'll get back to you in 6 to 8 weeks. So I sent them the first 10 pages, and they got back to me about a week later and said, send us the rest of the book. So I sent them the rest of the book, and within 10 days, I had a contract.
Well, there you go.
Wow, they obviously liked it.
That's how you do it.
And they liked it warts and all, which is the best thing, because there's still a lot of little bits and pieces that had to be done. I'd sent the book out for a couple of people to review, and one of them actually sent it back and said, there's too many, bits and pieces we can't get around. We can't overlook them just to read the story. It's too rough at this point in time. So hopefully that person will reread it again now that
it's just an early art copy, right?
Yeah, it was just an early copy, and I'd said that specifically. I said it out to everybody, but I did get some very good reviews back. I was looking for blurbs, just a couple of words or a couple of lines to to add to the process. And by the way, all those that have come back in, I've put on my website if people want to take a look as other authors have felt about the book.
Oh, good. That's smart.
And it's just my name, www.markpsadler.com.
And we'll also have all connections to your social media and website on our show notes. If anyone wants to go look Mark up and find out more, he's on our show notes on the website, our website.
Excellent.
Yes. All right, so on to Suspense Magazine. You were so kind to review Stealing Time in the December issue of Suspense Magazine, and I really appreciate that. We were curious about how you got involved in doing reviews and writing for that magazine. How did that turn out?
They reviewed my first book, Blood on His Hands, when it came out, and said, we like your style, would you mind reviewing for us?
Oh.
Which is simple, they asked. And I said, yeah, sure. So from there, I started sending me boxes of books every month, which was very nice. And luckily, I'm a fast read, naturally a fast reader. And so I do two or three books a month, as well as do my writing. I was doing the reviews. And that kept going on. Then I got them to buy me a Kindle. They just sent books to download. And one of the things that they do a lot of is looking for debut authors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, I can do that as well as they can. So basically, I can't remember the last time they actually sent me a book. I look in other places to find debut authors, or I'll approach people at book festivals and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so knowing what they want, I kind of take it upon myself to find people that don't know about Suspense Magazine. For instance, KJ,
yeah,
you hadn't submitted your book there, so I thought, well, that'd be a good chance to put one in there. So
yeah,
that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate it. It kind of was very exciting for me, especially right around Christmas, to have it in there. So I appreciate
well,
it.
Well, and on top of that, I also got, after I'd reviewed for so long, every time a review comes out, then I turn around and I have a blog that I write that's a book review blog.
Uh-huh.
So I put the review on there, and I put it on Amazon, and I put it on Goodreads and so on. And I actually got approached by Amazon. They have what they call a Vine reviewers, and they send you a list of books that are coming out, and you get to pick whatever books you might like, and they just send them to you.
Oh,
you get
cool
to review there. So I'm actually a Vine reviewer for Amazon as well.
Wow, check you out. That's really good, especially if you enjoy doing it. You did a great job with mine. I mean, you gave me good feedback. You also, you know, said it was good about it and had a nice little blurb and an overview of it. Apparently, you know, you're a fast reader and you're good at giving, you know, all the salient points of a novel. So it's a good use of your skills.
I was a little concerned about that with your novel, because yours is the first one I really reached out to the author and said, you know, give a few personal ideas and suggestions to,
mm-hmm,
as well. Usually I don't do that, but evidently with you, I felt there was something there that touched a nerve with me, and I was happy to pass that on.
Yeah, no, it was very useful. I the way I've looked at any reviews is, and you know, of course I want to hear what's good about it, but if there's things that I can do better, and I'm a new novelist, it's certainly things that I can improve on. It was, to me, it's humongously valuable to get someone's honest opinion. To me, that's a huge gift, so I really appreciate that.
Well, I'd actually had a gentleman who had sent me a copy of a novel that he was working on. He thought it was completely finished. And it was a few years ago, and he said, would you take a look at it before I send it out to a publisher? So I took it on vacation with me and just sat and read it, and there was just a couple of things that I thought, it doesn't ring true in this particular area. He was writing a young adult type thing, and about middle school kids, and there was a couple of scenes that he didn't have kids of that age, and I've had them of that age. I thought, they wouldn't do that, they'd do this, and so he was able to make some changes to that, and I think that actually improved the book. So having done that, when I saw yours, I felt more inclined about reaching out and making a couple of suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it depends on, you know, the relationship you have with that person too. There has to be a little bit of a trust, you know. So I think I was glad that you felt that way. Now tell us, in terms of writing for Suspense Magazine, does this help you sell your book? Is this a good strategy for getting your name out there and your book titles and that kind of thing?
Well, I thought that it would help because I knew it was going to be several years before the next book came out. So I thought it would help keep my name current,
mm-hmm,
and people would be more familiar with who I was when the next book came out. Whether that's true or not, I've yet to find out. But at least in my mind's eye, as I was doing it, that was the reason for doing it, was, you know, I know it's going to be for 3 or 4 years before the next book comes out because, you know, I work full time, so I can't write full time. And I think it's helped a little bit. I've found that people have gone to Amazon and sent me a little message or liked my review. So it definitely has helped a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like when you put mine up, you know, at the end of the article, it says who you are, what your name, the name of your book. And I don't remember if it was a link or not. I know that Suspense is an online magazine, so if there's a link to your Amazon page or something. But I definitely then looked you up, you know, of course, because we'd had this connection. But it's your name is out there, and then your book keeps getting seen. So every time you publish in that magazine, I would think at least nothing more. It's putting your name with your book, and that's always publicity, you know, people.
That's what I felt. So
visibility.
We noticed you had a book trailer. Have you found that helpful at all? And who did that for you?
No, I actually hired a company. I knew you'd ask me a question. I have no idea the answer to. I don't remember.
That's fair enough.
That's the fun of it.
I'm sure if you look at the trailer, it's got their name on there.
Okay.
So we'll have to look it up. I'm afraid off the top of my head, I don't recall anything. But they do a book review and a trailer for $75.
Hmm. Right.
I went, wow, that's great. I do things like I'll go into the local Apple store with all the computers on display, and I just pull up my little movie there and put them on all their computers.
Oh my God, that's hilarious!
That's something David Perlmutter would do.
Oh my
right?
God, that is
that.
We have to tell him that. Oh my God, that is hilarious!
You can go to all the TV stores. You can do the whole. You know, that's too funny. I love that on the computers.
It's so cheeky.
Anyway, to market the book.
It's all that cheeky marketing.
Yeah, exactly what that is.
And I am planning, once the book, The Kettle of Vultures, is out, I'm planning on going back to the same company and having them do it for me again.
Whoever they are.
And hopefully they know who they are by then.
They're still out there. I see their name pop up once in a while. What I liked about, and I wish I could remember the name of the company, but that's just old age for you. I always forget stuff. Is that they actually allowed me to have some input as to how what I wanted on there. They put together the little thing and they sent it to me rather than just putting it out and said, "How do you feel about this?" And I said, "You know, there's a bear in the book and it's kind of important to have a bear, so I want a bear." So they put a bear in there for me.
Cool.
Cool is that? Do they actually read the book before they do the trailer, or they just go from notes? How do they do that?
They read the book because they give you a full review as well.
That's we should have put it on Amazon or something? Or
yes, yeah. Put it on Amazon, put it on their site. Have you watched the trailer?
I watched some of it. It was a little scary for me, you know.
She's a delicate flower.
I'm such a delicate life. I have a traumatic life, you know. I'm now being very... now I'm very careful what I put in my brain. So.
Yeah. It's not good for me.
She writes comedic women's fiction, so...
I get the suspense for you. I'd be no good for Suspense Magazine, because is are we going to get to the end of the lemon cake or not? Who took the latch? Jemmy Dodger. It was you.
Suspense. The first book has a skull on the cover.
Oh.
And so I had that up on my computer, and my granddaughter was probably about 3 years old at the time. She thought that was really scary, you know.
Oh.
Really scary, but she liked it. She likes scary stuff.
There you go. So actually kind of moving on almost a little bit to social media, because we always like to ask our authors about what they're doing, what they like, what they're struggling with. How is your social media presence, and what are you doing out there?
I'm everywhere you can possibly think I'm going to be.
Wow. looking through the window as a Voyager.
Yeah.
Can you see me now?
Oh, no. That's such a creepy voice.
Right now, I'm already scared.
I have to be, because originally, when you self-publish, you have anybody doing marketing. I read everything I could read about marketing. I got on every interview show I could get on. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on anything, you name it. If I've heard about it, I'm on it in some presence or not. You just absolutely have to be. And even now, with an indie publisher, they don't do the marketing for you either. I mean, they do probably a small limited amount, but you're still responsible for doing everything. You still have to go out to all the book shows. You've got to go and take your book into the local independent bookstores and you got to show up and you got to do readings. And every time I go on vacation, I go to Oklahoma to see my kids. I'm going to go by Full Circle Bookstore. I'm going to call them ahead of time, have books sent in. I'm going to do a reading. Everything. Everything.
Wow. I never would have thought of doing that on vacation. That's actually quite a good idea, isn't it? You could just like read the books ahead.
Charge it off then. Charge it off for taxes as well.
Yeah, and you're already there. Hmm.
Hey, I feel I need to go to Bermuda. How about you, Katie?
Yeah, I think we need to do a few.
Bermuda?
like a week's worth at least.
Yeah, there's got to be more than one bookstore there, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And when you're writing, you talked a little bit about being a pantser, but do you have a particular sort of writing process that you have that you do?
Well, I wish I could say I wrote every day like you're supposed to. But I'm lucky if it's once every 2 weeks. I haven't done. Well, it probably is a little more than that, but I know I'm working on book two, and I'm probably about two-thirds of the way into most of that. Book one coming out, and all the final edits, and all of the extras been going on. I really haven't wanted to get too involved with book two, because I knew I'd like to get one out of the way before I really start on the other.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to wait 3 years before the next book comes out, because the end of the book one is kind of like a cliffhanger ready for book two. So I'd like to try and get it done.
I said, KJ's readers have been the same way. They've all been hanging on by a finger because she did the same thing with her book. You know, it's like, you suspense people, you leave us all hanging on a cliff.
And then we got to have a year to write the next book. I know, it's terrible.
It's like, what the heck?
I know.
But yeah, no, that's good. So do you have a sort of a time frame for that? Or do you write a certain amount of words? Would you try and hit some sort of goal? Or do you just wait till the mood takes you kind of thing?
A little bit of all that.
Right.
Problems that I have with what I'm writing currently is there's one scene in here that I know is going to be extremely hard to write. Hard to the point, emotionally, devastatingly, it's going to wear me out to write it.
Wow.
One of the things that they say to do in a suspense book is kill off your darlings. You know.
Right.
So I'm going to have his partner commit suicide.
Oh.
Wow.
And I have to write the scene because I'm writing in the first person. So when you do that, it's kind of like you being there. So I'm going to have to write where I walk in and find my best friend dead.
Oof.
And how to deal with that. And I don't know how I deal with that because that's never happened to me. So I know I've got that coming up, and so I'm kind of like
stalling,
putting it off until I get to a point where I know I can handle that.
Wow. Whew, I'm glad I write comedy. The only thing I could die is laughing my head off. I mean, wow. That's
awesome.
Did you have any of that with your book, KJ, when you were writing? Just those really intense scenes where they are to write?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, the end of Stealing Time. Are you kidding me? Even when I read it now, like, I'll go back and just read it so I know where to start the next book, and it, like, gets me every time. So, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Absolutely. You find, and I found this yesterday, you find when you read back your own stuff, you go, wow, I can't believe I wrote that.
I do. I'm like, sometimes I get, like, goosebumps. I'm like, who wrote? Oh, my God, that was me. Because it's a different place, you know, part of your brain is, you know, organized differently.
I can't believe I actually did. Wow, that's
pretty good. It's kind of the writer's curse. We don't know how good we are, or we don't know any kind of value until we've got that little bit of, you know, distance between our writing and our time of actually writing when you're, like, driving your mind trying to find the right word, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, we had that, Suzanne, when I was there with you, you read to me, I'm working on a short story now, and you read it out loud to your husband.
That's right, I did.
And, I read that thing, you know, 15 times. I was on the plane coming there, whatever. And it affected me so differently because I was like, oh my God, I was like, my heart was beating fast. And I was like, this is actually suspenseful. We're reading it myself. I was looking at each word and did it fit and that kind of thing. So it really did make a big difference.
That's really interesting. So go ahead.
No, I actually read a portion of my book and I was telling somebody about it at work. Somebody was already pre-ordered and paid for it. They go, when's the book coming? Yeah. I was telling them a little bit about the book and I found I choked myself up. It was so what I was telling. I couldn't even tell them without crying.
Wow.
So I figured that I must have done something right because I read it and I went, well, I just brought tears to my eyes. What? That particular scene. Wow, that's pretty good.
Good stuff.
They say tears in the writer, tears in the reader, right? You have to
have
that. Yeah. So that's good. That's a good sign.
It is. Very good sign.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
I enjoyed that. To go back to a little bit to the social media question you asked.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
One of the things that I've done over the last couple of years is build up a file with Pinterest.
How can
you do that as an author? I mean, there's no words, it's just pictures, right? So what I've done, and I don't know whether either one of you have a Pinterest page. KJ, I think you do.
Yeah, I do.
I do too, yeah.
You can also have secret files on Pinterest.
They'll have
three that nobody else can see. So what I've done there is, since it's three books, I have a secret file for each book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, as the books release, I'm going to release the Pinterest page.
So smart.
So what I've done, hey, Evan just saved a penalty. Woo!
I wonder what was distracting.
So what I've done was, there's a young lady in the novel that's a streetwalker prostitute. So I've described her with, you know, red hair and tattoos and all this kind of stuff. Well, I found a picture of someone on Pinterest that looks like her. So I've got these pictures of his half-sister, the prostitute. I've got pictures of the 1957 Porsche Cabriolet that he drives.
Oh.
I've got pictures of what I think his house looked like, and the furniture, and the clothes that he wears, and the food that his mother fed him in El Salvador when he was a kid.
These
pictures here of what I, in my imagination, is what I'm writing about looks like.
Wow.
I love that. That is such a good idea. And it's also a good tool for you without having to share with everyone. You keep it secret. And then when you're writing the scene, you can go back and look at the pictures or...
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great writing tool and a perfect use of marketing social media for that.
Well, I went through a workshop one time, and a lady who was teaching it said, when you write a paragraph, when you're in the editing process, you take that paragraph and you... edit paragraph by paragraph, and each paragraph should be a postcard. So when you're looking at the picture that you've just written on the paragraph, you should be able to see everything that you've written about on a postcard. And then you take it and you'll wonder what's above it, what's below it, what's to the left, what's to the right, what are the sounds, what are the smells. And so each paragraph you have to edit it in that way. And so when you take a picture in Pinterest, if you lose track of where you are in the writing process, and you can take that picture, and then that brings that whole postcard thing back.
That's true.
Particularly if we're visual. I'm very visual, and so is KJ. That would really work well for us.
Yeah.
How do you find marketing on Pinterest? Is that a good marketing social media site for you? I mean, do you have a lot of people repinning your pins and stuff?
Absolutely. I have thousands of followers.
Wow.
I do, too.
I don't know how to grow, man. I think I've got like 500. I've been there forever. I don't know what, maybe I'm not pinning the right stuff or something, but I don't seem to grow very fast.
You pin stuff that other people are interested in, and then when they become a follower, then they become interested in other stuff that you've got on there.
Ah, it's a little bit like Twitter then. You follow their
stuff. Sure.
Absolutely. Oh, interesting.
I've got pictures of wolves because my brother likes wolves. I've got pictures of hiking. I've got pictures of coffee. I've got pictures of gorgeous foliage and whatever inspires me. And I spend probably an hour a day going through Pinterest just pinning new pictures and new pictures and new pictures.
Well, that helps. Yeah. The time spent. I have about 3,000 followers on there. And I go every day. If I want to post something to Facebook, I'll go onto Pinterest and I'll find pictures that I like. It's usually beach stuff. You guys have seen them all. And then in the process of that, I like several things. So I spend probably about 5 minutes a day, not every day, but on Pinterest, just kind of keeping it current and then finding good images to share onto other social media sites. But I don't take good use of it. Like what you're talking about, Mark, is to actually use it for writing, which I think is, to me, adds a lot more value to my time because not only am I making content, but I'm also using it to help me visualize what I'm writing.
Yeah.
And to me, that I feel like I need to do because it's doing two things. It's not just more social media time, which I feel like I already spend enough, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I like that.
There's a tool. You're welcome.
I love it. Thank you. Suzanne, and we need to do, we keep talking about this, but we've got Blondie and the Brit needs to be up there on Pinterest.
I know, we need a Pinterest page.
I was trying to get my kids.
Put all our authors on it. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to do, and it won't be that hard to do. I actually was trying to talk one of my kids into, like, passionately loving this idea, and it just didn't stick.
Well, you can take Pinterest, and if somebody else has an interest in the same thing as you do, then you can invite them to pin on your page.
Yeah, we should do that with our authors, and then they can put, like, if
they've got... Exactly, because I have a mystery writers page that's on there, and it's and I've invited people, where do you write as a mystery writer? And you can put pictures of where you write.
Ooh, invite
Ooh, I
us.
Like that.
Start us, Mark. Get us going on this. Yeah. You can be our
impetus. Do that King of the Pinterest, Blondie and the Brit page. Show us how to do that, because you are good.
Well, I know how to do it. I just don't have time.
I'll have to pick a look and see.
Yes. Well, and then what you want to do, too, is you can be the first person to pin your interview on Blondie and the Brit into Pinterest, and then that will start me, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's how you do it, and then I'll just do it with the other people, and then you'll be the very first one, and probably the most popular one, I'm guessing. Just saying.
I don't know. I think Shameless is pretty popular.
Yeah, but is he on Pinterest? I don't know.
Is he on Pinterest? I bet he would be if he was on there.
True. He is that kind of guy. I love Seamus. He's so cool.
Well, that was good. So I'm in charge of the lightning round by the looks of it.
Yes, it looks that way, doesn't it?
Okay, you've heard this before, right, Mark, how we do the lightning round?
Just remind me, because it's been a little while.
Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to ask you 10 questions, and they're just they're short answers, so you don't have to go into a huge, long, unless we get excited and want to ask you about it, but it just is a quick answer to whatever we ask. So that's why it's called the lightning round. So sometimes we have authors, and they want to tell us a whole story, and it's like, no, this is not what it's about. Just a quick answer is great. So.
What? So I don't have to pull up Google here and start typing in
your questions? No, exactly. Or go into big deep history, you know, moments, you know, with your family and ancestors or anything like that. So.
Ancestors.
All right, well, I'll do my
best. Great Uncle Sid. Yeah.
For the makeup of the Edmonton team, you know.
That's it, yeah. How's Everton doing? They're doing okay before we move into lightning round?
It's about 10 seconds from halftime and there's still no score.
Mm. Oh, well, that's good. At least you'll be able to watch it with sound, because we're nearly done here. So. second part. Okay, so are you ready?
I will do my best.
Okay, so what is your favorite band or artist?
Phil Collins. Yeah, he sings my favorite song, so we'll make him my favorite.
So what's the favorite song that he sings?
God, I don't know the title of the song.
Yeah, put him on the spot.
The Air Tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's a great song. Okay, left coast or right?
Left.
Oh, me too. What is your favorite writing spot?
Well, I don't have too many choices. It's where I am right now, I guess, which is just off the kitchen in a little desk area.
Yeah, okay. And are you a pantser? Well, we know this, actually. You're a pantser, right? But you thought you were a plotter. So you were definitely a pantser, yeah?
No, I'm a pantser.
Yeah. If you could be transported back in time, this should be good for a suspense person. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
1940s.
Ooh.
Did you like the war? Did you like that kind of that time period?
Music and that time period, yeah.
Cool. If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
Visibility.
Oh, invisibility? Oh. A lot of people say that. That's interesting.
It is.
Yeah. Who or what inspires you?
Right, come back to me on that one.
Okay. What is your favorite writing or author moment so far?
That's an easy one. There's a group out in Alamogordo, New Mexico, that's the library, not the actual library itself, but a group that meet there. I forget the term that they use, but they buy books for the library. Anyway, they called me up and bought 20 books and asked how much I would charge to come out there and talk to them. And I hadn't even thought about charge. What? So I said, well, pay my gas and buy me dinner. So I drove out to Las Cruces and sat down with about 20 of them and discussed my book for an hour.
Cool.
Wow. Did you get some great insights that way?
I don't think I did. I just enjoyed talking.
that's great, though, isn't it? Don't you love that?
Awesome.
One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
It takes at least 15 books before you can make a living doing it.
Oh, keep writing.
No, we all. Yeah. What book do you wish you had written?
Sons and Lovers by D.H. Lawrence.
Oh, I did D.H. Lawrence at school. Yeah, he's a pretty good writer.
It's kind of funny because I don't read generally what I write. I love relationship books.
Oh, that's cool. Interesting.
So have you got an answer for who inspires you? Because it could be Everton.
They have been very inspiring of late. I've got to say it's another writer, and I would say Jim Krejci.
Is he a suspense writer as well?
No, He's actually from Birmingham, England.
He's from Birmingham? Oh, God bless him. He's from where I'm from.
Oh.
Cool.
Connection.
Well, what does he write? What genre does he write in?
He writes a little bit of everything.
Huh.
In my first book, Blood on His Hands, there's a scene where the body's been laying off the trail for about a week. It's rotting and, you know, the little animals and birds have taken pieces of flesh and running away with it. And that was inspired by a scene that he wrote in a book called Being Dead, about a couple that were murdered and left on the beach, and the crabs and seagulls were doing the same thing. And it was, I've just always enjoyed some of the scenes that he's written. And just that moment being inspirational to something else that I wrote was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Oh.
Suzanne, that sounds just like something you'd put in your book.
Just like what I'd put in my book. It's right there. People being eaten by the crabs. That's it. In fact, you've inspired me for my next book.
There we go. By the seashore.
He's written everything from stories about Christ. He wrote a book about basically an end of the world type thing where steamships were no longer in being. Everything had gone back to sail. And everybody was leaving America to go back to Europe again because the plague had killed everybody off here. And he's written medieval stuff. He's written caveman stuff. I mean, just a little bit of everything. But the stories are always so fascinating. It's C-R-A-C-E, Jim Krejci.
Great.
And is he still alive, do you know?
Oh, yeah, he's still alive. He came out with a new book last year. It's very much literature more than anything else. But
right.
It's definitely worth reading.
Cool. That's great. Well, this has been lots of fun. I think this is a really good interview, and we thank you so much for your time, Mark, for being on our show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, March 13th, it's the Tucson Festival of Books, and the 12th and the 13th, the whole weekend. I will be appearing at the North Pavilion between 10 a.m. and noon. Selling both my books. I have also, at 12:30, will be at the same pavilion. I've been randomly chosen to give a 10-minute talk about my book.
Oh, cool.
And I'm not sure the exact location of this yet, but one of the local stores, Mostly Books, will have a booth out there, and from 2 to 2:45, I will be selling my book through them.
Very cool. So if you're in Tucson or near that area, rush on out and go see Mark Sadler this coming weekend, at least as the program is airing on March 13th.
Thank you for joining us on Blondie and the Brit, and thank you to Matt Sadler, some great information there. And join us next week when we'll be listening to Lawrence O'Brien. He is a social media promoter for authors. He's a great person and got some great information, also an award-winning author. And he's Irish and it's St. Patrick's Day. Make sure you tune in next week. Thanks very much.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.